First Baptist Church of Redmond, June 26th, 2022, John chapter 7, Judge with Righteous Judgment.
Please rise and join me in reading John 7:24. Do not judge by the outward appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. You may be seated.
The last four words of John 7:24 are our theme and our message title, Judge with Righteous Judgment. You should know what to do, know what God says, and act accordingly. For most homeowners in a hot housing market, the value of their property trends tends to rise dramatically. But not for a woman named Carlet Duffy. Her home seemed to not rise in value after all, and Duffy couldn't find a satisfactory explanation. That is, until the answer to that question was too obvious to ignore. Duffy was looking to borrow against its equity when she got an appraisal for her home. She was surprised when the appraised value, there's houses this cheap in America, was appraised amount at $125,000 for a freestanding house, which seemed low compared to the findings she seen anecdotally to friends or family. So she had another appraisal done, and the second came out to only $110,000, just $10,000 more than when she'd bought the house 4 years earlier. Nagged by her suspicions that the lowball offers was because she was an African American, Duffy again got a third appraisal, but this time she took pains to not reveal her racial identity because she responded by email and asked a friend's white husband to stand in during the appraisal's visit to the home. She removed all the pictures of her family, any photographs. She left artwork hanging up, but she removed all the pictures of the family from her home. That appraisal came back at $259,000, more than double the original amount. The representative who contacted the second appraisal claimed that his work was driven by only relevant data. But according to Andrea Perry, a researcher who studies housing discrimination, that explanation fails to account for the history of institutional racism in the entire state. Perry said, quote, "It's almost when people see black neighborhoods, they see twice as much crime than there actually is. They see worse education than there actually is. I think that's what's happening when appraisers, lenders, real estate agents see blackness. They devalue the accent. They devalue the property," unquote. Duffy has since teamed up with the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana, it's Indiana, to file a complaint with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. We dishonor the image of God. We are when we are unwilling to treat people of other racial groups equally. We are all God's creative masterpieces, and we should be treated as such. Jesus stood out because he claimed to be God's son. He was uniquely God's son. And the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Sanhedrin had decided to try to kill him. That's the basis of this morning's section And we'll be preaching from it at least one more week, go through chapter 7. By the way, I think John chapter 8, the first part, verses 1 through 11, are part of the Bible. I disagree with those who reject it. I'll tell you why in the message, but I'll be preaching all of John 8. I'll begin with verse 6 by introduction. I'll begin with verse 1 by introduction. Jesus was walking in Galilee, for he was unwilling to walk in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. I preached last week that the events which occurred in the period April to October are summarized by John in one verse. Matthew, Mark, and Luke have many other details. They fill in the blanks. But we come to about 6 months before Jesus was crucified. But when it was now the middle of the feast, I'm picking up in verse 14, Jesus went up into the temple area and began to teach. He arrived late to the Feast of Tabernacles. The Jews then were astonished, saying, quote, "How has this man become learned, not having become educated?" All of a sudden, Jesus appears. He makes himself known in the Feast of Tabernacles and appeared in the temple area. I think he appeared in the court of the Gentiles. That was the lower right section you can see here. The feast, which lasted fully a week, was already half over. His time to give himself in death for the nation and for the world was not yet here. He would die as a Passover lamb the next Passover season. With so many pilgrims present in Jerusalem, many were sufficiently interested in Jesus and had a sympathy towards him that harming him might have led to difficulties for those in charge. Really, adequate preparations for his arrest was no longer possible. That's why Jesus delayed. Jesus then, having found a convenient place for himself, perhaps in the court of the Gentiles, because everybody could come to the court of the Gentiles, sat to teach. A crowd of listeners quickly gathered whom he started to instruct. The teacher sat like me. The Bible days of Jesus, the teacher sat. So I'm following Jesus. Ha ha ha. That was a joke. This time there is no miracle performed, as on the previous occasion in chapter 5, healing someone on the Sabbath day who couldn't walk. But the people will soon discover that whatever the Lord does is amazing, his teaching as well as his miracles. Presently, some of the hostile leaders joined the audience. The last phrase, "How has this man become learned, not having become educated?" One might say that he, Jesus, had failed to receive his degree at an accredited institution. Therefore, whatever he said must be wrong. As a sidelight, you can tell that when I type, I add the capital H's letters, and I forgot to add the capital H to Jesus because it's a way to respect him. So forgive me, and forgive me, Lord, for not capitalizing the words. So Jesus answered them and said, "My teaching is not my own, but his who sent me. Not taught by man, nor self-taught, but instructed by God himself. He had communion with his Father, and his Father did the direction and the leadership And Jesus learned to obey as a son. Instructed by God himself, that was his answer. Not only had he derived his contents of his teaching from his Father in heaven, but he had also been divinely commissioned to convey it to the people on earth. Let his enemies take note of this fact that in rejecting him and his message, they were rejecting God. I have an example of his teaching. And whosoever gives one of these little ones even a cup of cold water because he is a disciple, because he is saved, truly I say unto you, he will by no means lose his reward. That teaches that God notices everything, and he notices everything so he can reward you. If anyone is willing to do his will, he will know about the teaching, whether it is of God or I am speaking from myself. If there be no true desire to obey the will of God as expressed in his word, true knowledge will not be found. This introduces the interesting question. How are the various elements of the Christian experience related to each other? How does it all work together? In general, it may be said that according to the teaching of Christ and the apostles, knowledge comes first. Add to your faith virtue, add to your virtue knowledge, 2 Peter 1 says, and verses 5 through 7 say the goal of the teaching is to express love. Greater love hath no man than this, than he give his life for his friends. The one who speaks from himself seeks his own glory, but he who is seeking the glory of the one who sent him, he is true, and there is no unrighteousness in him. Jesus begins to develop the theme of personal righteousness. What is righteousness? Anything that God wants you to do. What a self-appointed prophet do what Jesus is always doing. What he show that in all his words and action that he is seeking the glory of not himself, but the one who sent him. Would not the one who is merely uttering his own private opinions do the exact opposite thing? Would he not seek his own glory? That's the point of Jesus. He's not seeking his own glory. He's not a candidate looking for votes. He's not a politician. But he is seeking to glorify his Father. These words serve a purpose. They serve to point it out what the Pharisees and Sadducees and the synagogue leaders were actually doing, what actually made them mad, and what actually was their motivation to kill him, put him to death. Why? Because he said something different. They exposed the sin of these leaders. They were the very people who were always seeking to promote their own glory, even to such an extent that 6 months after the Feast of Tabernacles, their envy of him caused them to deliver up Jesus to be crucified. They could not just take it that there was such an interest in Jesus on the part of the crowds. He gives an example. Did Moses not give you the law, and yet none of you carries out the law? Why are you seeking to fill me? Jesus came to fulfill all everything that was in the law. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or tittle, these are talking about the letters of the writing, shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. The offended one, Jesus, is now taking the offensive. He is attacking their leaders. It shows that Jesus was at this very moment reading the hearts of these men. He knew that while they tried to pose as guardians of the law of Moses, a law in which is summarized in the one word, love, Leviticus 19:10, they had hatred and murder in their own hearts. But the terrible charge, the devastating accusation, is not aimed only, though especially, at the leaders. Jesus knows that the citizens of Jerusalem are going to join with him, and so will others. John 7:44. Some wanted to seize him, but no one could lay a hand on him. 6 months from now, the entire mob gathered in Jerusalem from everywhere will shout, "Let him be crucified." The question, "Why are you seeking to kill me?" is in a sense meant for the entire, everybody in the entire gathered audience. Now the crowd answered, "You have a demon. Who is seeking to kill you?" They very cleverly lay their plans. Their plot eventually succeeds. The people in general never realize what has happened. If the intended victim of the leader's envy would ever have told them in plain language, "These leaders are plotting my ruin," they would have replied, "Man, you have a demon or at least a persecution complex. Nobody is trying to harm you in any way. They don't like Jesus because they saw him as the great divider. He had the authority of God. He had a pure character. He was on a mission to glorify the Father, and he taught like no one else taught in doctrine, and he fulfilled Bible prophecy." Jesus answered them, "I did one deed, and you are all astonished." To be sure, Jesus had performed other deeds of healing in Jerusalem, John 2:23, 4:45, but this one deed, we're still talking about the miracle just outside by the pool of Bethesda, the cure of the paralytic in John 5:1-18, performed on the Sabbath. And anything that they didn't say goes on the Sabbath day, that's what made them angry, had been the many occasion for the plot against his life. The miracle itself, but especially the circumstances, a.k.a. it was on the Sabbath, had caused generally amazement. He gives a Bible reason. "For Moses has given you circumcision," not that is from Moses, but from the fathers. "And even on a Sabbath, you circumcise a man." They were told there at least was one exception to traveling, working on the Sabbath. Though this practice became an ordinance for Israel by virtue of its inclusion in the Mosaic legislation, yet it was practiced long before Moses. Abraham practiced circumcision. Why? Because it was the sign of the covenant. It was the sign that Israel was special because God wanted this act done. He wanted the act done on the eighth day after a male child will be born. And again, it was started by Abraham, He was codified by Moses, but it was long before Moses lived. The Jews, in their zeal for the law of Moses, were prone to forget that certain important religious practices were in vogue long before its time. Now, according to the law which governed this religious rite, a male child had to be circumcised on the eighth day after its birth. The point Jesus stresses is this: even if that eighth day happens to be on a Sabbath, all bets are off. The child is circumcised. The parents were told you couldn't walk very far. The priest was told he couldn't walk very far, but the child had to be presented, was presented at the temple, but he could be presented at a synagogue or something. But however long the priest or the parents and the family members had to walk was okay. So they were already exceptions to Sabbath breaking. If a man receives circumcision on a Sabbath so that the law of Moses will not be broken, are you angry at me because I made an entire man well on the Sabbath? If ceremonial cleansing of one part of the body is permitted on the Sabbath, then would actually healing of the entire body, yes, of the entire man, body and soul, because we think the man trusted Christ as a result, be forgiven on the Sabbath, giving the people righteous cause for anger against the healer? Because Mark 2:27 says, the Sabbath was made for man. It was supposed to be beneficial for people and not man for the Sabbath. The argument, of course, is unanswerable. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The whole point is this: do not judge by the outward appearance, but judge with righteous judgment. What the people, both the leaders and the rest, should do is this: they should calmly reflect on these matters. They should calmly reflect on the truth. Wasn't Jesus right to heal a man on the Sabbath day? They should cease from being so rash in their judgment. Jesus says, stop judging superficially, which is literally according to appearance, but render just judgment. Compare the somewhat similar thought so beautifully expressed in 1 Samuel 16:7. Man looks worth at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. For us, we're concerned by the negative reaction to his sudden appearance by, first, the leaders, already filled with anger against him because of the happenings at the pool of Bethesda. Their hostility increases in bitterness when they notice that he not only confirmed his earlier exalted claims, but also exposes their inconsistent reasoning about the Sabbath, aka you could travel to circumcise a child, all bets are off, you could travel any distance required. But you're saying, in contrast to that, that you couldn't heal a person, body and soul, on the Sabbath day. And that within the crowd, there is considerable sentiment in his favor. Hence, they make an abortive attempt to arrest him. He speaks against some of the citizens of Jerusalem. These reject him because, quote-unquote, they know where he comes from, unquote. the citizens of Capernaum around the region of the Sea of Galilee didn't think he was anything special. Why? He didn't take time. Many years, I spent 9 years in seminary and college. It would be at least that amount of time if I took training in Jesus' day to be a rabbi. Why? You couldn't be a rabbi until you were recognized to be 30 years old. So, and many of the pilgrims watching, on the basis of his signs, they regard him as being the Messiah. But only because of the signs, they weren't listening, paying attention to God's leading. I want to tell you a story. It's from baseball. In Major League Baseball, it's common for umpires to eject players or team personnel whose behavior is deemed out of line. If you get in a fight, if you argue balls and strikes, or if you say some inappropriate things about the umpire's heritage, it's certain you'll be ejected. But rarely do those ejected include an entire grounds crew, like in this picture. Major League Baseball umpire Chief Terry Timmons later denied ejecting them per se, but that's what he appeared to do during a mid-September game between the Baltimore Orioles and the New York Yankees. The Orioles had a one-run lead when storm clouds were gathering overhead and appeared that rain was imminent. As is their duty, the grounds crew stood to be on the first baseline holding their massive tarp, ready to spread it over the field to protect it from rainfall. That is, until Timmons emphatically waved them off the field. It was the ninth inning, and Timmons wanted to finish the whole game. After the game, Timmons texted the Associated Press, quote, "I didn't eject the grounds crew. I just didn't want all of them behind the tarp, especially with the infield in." Timmons' unspoken but understandable concern was with avoiding an unnecessary delay to the game. It takes time for the grounds crew to either uncover or cover the field, and that doesn't even include whatever delay the rain might incur. So, with home games close, and it was close to the conclusion, the Yankees were at bat. Timmons' desired echoed many of American workers of a long day at work. It was 10 o'clock in the evening. He just wanted to go home. After a few minutes, you know I'm telling the story. After a few minutes, the grounds crew was ushered away. Yankees batter Brett Gardner ended up hitting a two-run single to win the game. Hooray! Now, the point of that is, when we serve the Lord, we must have sound judgment. Wisdom isn't just mindlessly applying the same standard to every situation. With the bottom of the ninth, with the top of the ninth approaching, let's just finish the game. But assessing the time and situation to continually discern the most prudent course of action. Jesus is asking the entire crowd, what makes sense? If there's already an exclusion on the basis of circumcision to work on the Sabbath, can't I heal somebody on the Sabbath day and make them whole without being criticized or mocked or condemned?